Ministry of Justice and Drew for a Thursday rolls on. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Hashtag TCNT on Twitter if you want to get involved in the program at any time.
We've got Sam is keeping an ear on the National Prayer Breakfast. President Donald Trump is speaking right now, but nothing exciting.
Nothing too exciting.
Not talking anything. All that. Just talking.
Just talking.
All right. Well, if he does anything exciting, he lets us know.
I will let you know.
Yeah, we got somebody exciting on the phone.
Very exciting.
Out of MinPost, can an elected official in Minnesota serve two positions at once? Here to break it all down, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
That was this out of MinPost. That was the central question before the Ramsey District Court Judge John Guthman on Tuesday morning, adding pressure to this particular situation of whether or not Lieutenant Governor Michelle Fischbach, the elected official, can serve two positions at once. Adding pressure to the situation is the fact that the 2018 legislative session convenes on February 20th, just 2 weeks away. Democrats brought the case on behalf of Destiny Dususki, a resident in Fischbach Senate District. The case argues Destiny has a right to representation under the Constitution, but she isn't being represented with Fischbach, who must serve only as lieutenant governor. And we can work through.
By the way, just for the record, the Destiny, she's a partisan hack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not surprising. And we can work through some of the details here, but have you had a chance to look over what took place in the courtroom? I got a couple of questions here for you, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are right now that it has had one of its first days in court.
Yeah, I did read the story and I've been paying attention to it. I mean, my first thought is, why the heck do we have an office of lieutenant governor and have a salary for it? Because it seems like the office is absolutely useless.
Yep.
Yeah, they even say that in the story.
Yeah, I think it was Judge Guthman, who, by the way, is the same judge that heard the legislature's lawsuit against Dayton, and I thought in that case did a very well-reasoned opinion. And from this story, I think he asked all the right questions, and I hope that some future governor considers him or the Court of Appeals or Supreme Court. But he seems like a really smart guy.
Yeah, before you go on, just real quick to what you were talking about, Kevin Magnuson, Fischbach's attorney. At one point during the hearing, Guthman, the judge, pondered out loud what exactly is the role of Minnesota's lieutenant governor, especially if they don't preside over the Senate and if attorneys can argue someone can do both jobs at once. Fischbach's attorney could only come up with one true role to serve in place of the governor if they can't fulfill their duties. He said they are to inquire daily as to the health of the governor, to which the judge laughed. That'll make you look forward to getting up in the morning.
Yeah, exactly right. That it is literally all the office does is whatever they, you know, I think that when, with our previous lieutenant governor, Tina Smith, I think she occasionally made a cut a ribbon or something too. With whatever they're going to watch, it's a nothing office.
Yeah.
It's an absolute nothing office. And this whole argument that she can't serve in both roles is a joke. I mean, the Judge Guthman brought up the Supreme Court that we've all talked about on the air before. About where Schooley says the president of the Senate can serve as lieutenant governor on an interim basis, and the Democrats' only response to this is, well, there was this constitutional amendment. The constitutional amendment took away every single duty of the lieutenant governor's office. So I don't see how the argument is that somehow you overrule this Supreme Court case because the lieutenant governor does less than what the lieutenant governor did at that time.
Do you think that could end up being sort of the crux of where the judge falls on making the decision? Is if the argument is she can't serve in both roles, but one of those roles actually has no
role
prescribed duties, then could it just be as simple as that being what the judge comes down on?
Actually, I think he's going to go a different way. And if you read through it, you know, there was some discussion, remember, from the case with the legislative lawsuit, he originally ruled on the constitutionality of it. And the Supreme Court overturned it by punting and saying, it's a political issue, we don't need to decide it.
Right.
I think he's going to use that reasoning, and I think he's going to say, there's a political solution to this, the court should stay out of it. And I mean, there is a political solution. You appoint the DFLer to being the president of the Senate under an agreement with the governor, and let them become lieutenant governor. There's no reason to go through this other than partisan shenanigans. So I think he's going to use, judges don't like to be overturned, okay? So So I think it probably bothered them a little bit that he had a very well-reasoned opinion in the other case, and they just simply, you know, overturned it for political reasons. I think he's going to use their reasoning against them and say, well, applying that logic, we should just stay out of it.
Yeah, in the story, again, going back to what you mentioned a moment ago, the 1898 Minnesota Supreme Court case in which the justices ruled the Senate president can also serve as lieutenant governor, the case provided the most contentious part of the hour-long hearing. Guthman asked, what authority do I have to overrule a Minnesota Supreme Court decision? It was argued that the ruling became moot after a 1972 amendment to the Constitution that removed most of the legislative duties of the lieutenant governor who previously had presided over the chamber on a regular basis. Times have changed, he said. Guthman then posed that question to Fishbach's attorney. Is that a sea change?
Yeah. I don't see the sea change being that the lieutenant governor has less of a role than they did at the time of that, you know, of that case. I don't see how that argument, how that makes that decision moot, because they do less now.
Yeah.
It would be easier to do two roles than it was then.
Yeah, Guthman also posed plenty of questions about the role of the third branch of government, the courts, in settling a political dispute, grilled both sides on whether the courts had any place at all in this dispute. In particular, he expressed concern the previous court precedent found only the legislature has the authority to rule on whether a member of either of its chamber is eligible to serve or not. Magnuson said, Fishbach's attorney to the judge, that she should dismiss the case on that grounds and brought up the court case over legislative funding this summer, saying the court held in that case that the courts need not interfere with the political process if there is a political process that can resolve the issue, he said.
I think he might very well that way, and just say under precedent, the Supreme Court just recently ruled, we are to stay out of these matters, so we're staying out of these matters.
What's the next step if that does happen?
If he does dismiss the case, then the DFL Act that the plaintiff will appeal to to the Court of Appeals. My guess is Tom Bach is funding all of this. the Court of Appeals, as a matter of right, as long as you get your appeal in by the point of time, you get an appeal, so you go in front of the Court of Appeals, and then depending on how they were to rule, the Supreme Court has the if it were to go, whatever party loses that level could appeal to the Supreme Court, petition for a review, and the Supreme Court could decide if they want to review. Practically speaking, this case become moot, depending on the results of the Senate election on Cottage Grove. This fight is happening because if Michelle Fishbach would not be able to serve in both roles, then there'd be a special election for her Senate seat and could possibly tip the balance of power. That's what Tom Bach and the Democrats want. They want to be able to try to flip the Senate over this.
Right.
By having the governor appoint her to a nothing position. So I think that we'll have to watch and see what happens in the political climate. If this becomes an issue where all we're doing is fighting over whether or not the Republicans have a one- or two-vote majority, I don't know that they proceed further with the case.
Yeah, and if you ever have any doubts about the pettiness, the political pettiness of our governor, all you got to do is look at this instance. This could have been so easily resolved if he had just gone along with Speaker Dowd, Paul Gazelka. They offered special session, elected president, anybody, president of the Senate, that anybody that Governor Dayton wanted, then that person would ascend to the lieutenant governor's seat when Franken resigned and Smith got appointed. This could have been easily resolved, and Dayton could have had a lieutenant governor of his choosing, but he chose to go this route. He chose to waste our time, taxpayer money, court's time, all of this, just for the slight possibility that he could get a DFL majority in the Senate.
I agree with you to some extent, but I think it also, I know that one of his requirements for a special session to appoint a replacement president was that he wanted all sides of leadership to agree to it. I mean, he's not going to stand up to Tom Bach. He's just not. And that's the person that was the stalemate on this. They would have gone forward. I think the governor would have gone forward with a special session if his leadership in the Senate would have gone along with it. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, if the governor, he's the governor, right? He's got the bully pulpit. He could have said, you know, we should do this and put some pressure on him, but he didn't.
Jeff O'Brien, before we let you go, just switching gears here for just a moment, just considering your background as lawyer extraordinaire, we've got an article here out of Fox News, and I know I'm kind of coming out of this out of the blue, but we were going to talk about it in a moment. Criminal referral is backing up the Nunes dossier claims as Dems push for a rebuttal memo. I'm just curious your thoughts going back to the. To those memos becoming public last Friday, and the means at which they were presented to the FISA court, and sort of the circular reporting that took place. I'd just be curious to sort of get your gut reaction to that FISA memo, just given your background.
I'm obviously concerned about how they went about. If this in fact is true that. You know, BS dossier was the basis for FISA warrants. My view is release everything. Let's see what the basis was for all of this and find out who's responsible for it. I don't think that it behooves any of us of any party to have our federal government behaving this way, the way it does behind closed doors like this.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's certainly, at a bare minimum, expose exactly just how thin the arguments need to be and the evidence necessary to go and issue one of these FISA warrants as well, which is being, of course, lost in all of the discussion over the possibility of Trump and Russia collusion.
Right. Yeah, you know, you saw this, you know, this talk on the Democrat side, particularly about the criticisms of the FBI and, you know, the intelligence community and all of this. It's like, yeah. We've all known for decades the FBI, you know, leadership is not comprised of fire boys. I mean, we have a full-length feature film on J. Edgar Hoover that goes through. The man kept his job through presidential administration by having files of blackmail on all elected officials. So they aren't angels.
Yeah, yeah. There's a long and sordid history of corruption within the FBI, which I just have to laugh every time I see, you know, an Amy Klobuchar or a Tina Smith or any of these Democratic, you know, elected officials or pundits just sort of fan themselves at, oh my gosh, how dare these Republicans cast aspersions on this noble organization?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The noble organization that for. You know, I don't know how many decades J. Edgar Hoover survived.
But, yeah.
And he's the one we knew about. We don't know about what else got on. I think that's part of the point.
Yeah, this noble organization that tried to convince Martin Luther King to commit suicide.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, real good stuff there. And again, that's not saying that everybody within the FBI is bad, but it's foolish and naive to sit here and think that there aren't bad actors within the FBI.
Right. You get to a certain point with nothing, and you know, I remember listening, I think about a week or so ago when Howard Root was on. You get to a certain point with some of the in your career with these departments, and you start to see yourself as, you know, kind of judge, jury, and executioner, and that's not good.
Yep. Jeff O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure.
Coming up, we will get to Dai Tao and how he don't mess around.
You don't care.
We will also cover. We'll stay on Russia and the memo here for just a few minutes. Out of Fox News, we'll talk about this criminal referral. Also, this article out of Reason.com. There's still being no big there in the Russian probe. I think part of the problem, and we'll talk about this. Part of the problem that I think we have is that we almost get too many details. Like, you just need to look at all this stuff on its face, and it's bad enough. Like, I mean, if you just get the baseline version of what had happened here, you almost don't need to go any further than that. We will go a little bit further, though, coming up in just a few minutes here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice in.
Together as Americans, we are a tireless force for justice and for peace. We have witnessed this truth over the past year. For years, ISIS had brutally tortured and murdered Christians, Jews, religious minorities, and countless Muslims. Today, the coalition to defeat ISIS has liberated almost 100% of the territory just recently held by these killers in Iraq and all throughout Syria. Much work will always remain, but we will never rest until that job is completely done, and we are really doing it like never before.
like never before.
It was
much work. So much
work. Such
work.
Such work.
All the work.
So much.
It was almost refreshing earlier. It was like a little earlier we asked you because you were monitoring as President Donald Trump at the National Prayer Breakfast here on Twin Cities News Talk. And Sam, I asked you, anything interesting? You're like, no, not really. And I was like, there was actually a moment where I went, oh, that's really refreshing.
Oh, good.
That's boring Trump sometimes is good. Yeah. Is good Trump. I'm not going to go so far as to say this is going to be the new norm.
I mean, maybe if I hop on Twitter, there's something that I didn't think was a big deal that was a big deal. But overall, the speech was
no. Here's what's going to happen. It's a predictable pattern. There's going to be a bunch of people that are going to complain that it was boring Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, did this national prayer breakfast. He didn't really say anything provocative. Those complaints are going to get back to Trump, and he's going to be like, well, time to stir it up.
He hadn't done that in a while, though.
Yeah.
In his defense.
Yeah. He's been quiet on Twitter, too.
Well, I was listening to a commentary about a week ago, and it was accurate. They were talking about since the first of the year. Now, granted, we're only in, I don't know, what is February? What is it, 8th, 9th? What's the day today? We're only a little while into this new year. But since the beginning of the year, the tone coming from the White House and Trump's use of Twitter has changed quite a bit. Now, whether or not that is going to remain that way remains to be seen. But given even some of the controversies that have happened since the first of the year, it has been a noticeable shift to the way that Trump had been handling things leading up to the end of the year. It could just be a byproduct that they actually changed the code on Trump's phone so Barron can't tweet anymore. That's a possibility. fully
they
ready to admit.
Put, like, the thumbprint verification on there.
But even with the memo stuff, he's been relatively tame. Now
he did when the news came out about the new text messages that had been released from Strzok and Page.
Right.
He did tweet, and I'll have to find it. I don't have it in front of me, but it was just something like, "This is a bombshell."
Yeah, he did tweet that.
Yeah. All text, all caps. New FBI texts are bombshells.
Okay. So maybe it's a little combination of him. Maybe it's a little combination of us. Maybe we're all just finally getting used to it. Maybe that's what the circumstances are. Along the lines of the memo, a couple things. First off, out of Fox News, newly released version of GOP senator's criminal referral for Trump dossier author Christopher Steele appears to support the key claims from the controversial memo on the alleged surveillance abuse released by last week by the House representatives at the White House. In the memo, the central point of dispute is the Nunes document claims that the salacious anti-Trump dossier was crucial to the FBI's efforts to seek a surveillance warrant for a Trump associate, and that the applications omitted by the DNC and the Clinton campaign's funding for the research via Glenn Simpson's Fusion GPS firm, which hired Steele. So the surveillance applications, they said, relied heavily on Mr. Steele's dossier claims. Nunes made a comment that perhaps that was left out of the memo, that the FISA court was aware that the Clinton campaign and the DNC had funded it, because that was an argument that was being made. But this goes back to what I was saying before. I almost don't like getting that far into the weeds on this, because the baseline version is already bad and kind of all you need to know when you look at why the dossier was made, when you look at
opposition research.
Yeah, intelligence with no proof. It's gossip, and that gossip peddled to the FBI, which was then peddled to the FISA court, which then authorized this. The baseline version is already bad enough, and all you need to know.
Right. They were surveilling American citizens based on opposition research and unfounded gossip.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's all you need to know.
And when you get into the Reason article, there's still no big there in the Russia probe. It breaks down. It talks about Peter Strzok. It talks about the text with her and Lisa Page. All of the different things that are supposed to connect Trump to collusion, none of which end up being illegal, right? Mm-hmm. When you go through this, even when you go all the way into Donald Trump Jr.'s June 26 meeting at Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer who claimed to have dirt on Hillary, that wasn't illegal. Okay, for me. It is just for me, okay? At the most, all that we know, at the most, is that Trump's team, and maybe even with knowledge of Trump, okay, which is why they don't want him to be interviewed by Mueller, okay, may have attempted to utilize knowledge that Russia might have had to use against Hillary Clinton, right? At most, that's all that we have evidence of, none of which is illegal, which is also exactly the same thing that apparently Hillary Clinton's campaign was doing, and that I think everybody could agree Hillary Clinton's campaign would have done.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same thing. And what Adam Schiff allegedly did by two Russian pranksters who offered him naked photos of Trump, to which he was trying to get them from him. And why? Because he wanted to make Trump look bad.
Yep. KW in Minneapolis. Good morning, KW. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Can I just make two quick points? First of all, as a DFLer, I hope that Donald Trump is a one-term president. With that said, you know, Donald Trump, he's not the best orator, you know, not even close to being a top orator. I think Donald Trump, he set examples by his actions. But once he opened his mouth and talked, I mean, it takes all the air out of the balloon. He's just not a good orator. Secondly, about this dossier, I mean, if the Russians changed any votes, it should be an issue. But if they're just, you know, putting out dirt on people, the media are the ones that spread this dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it didn't change any votes, I mean, they need to find something. You know, they either need to crap or get off the pot.
Yeah.
The investigators.
Yeah. You're right. You're exactly right. And it's even more telling because you have a culture of leaks in Washington, right? It's even more telling that this has been going on now for as long as it's been going on now, over a year now, and there still isn't a smoking gun. If there was a smoking gun, it would have gotten into the hands of a New York Times reporter by now. It would have gotten into the hands of a Washington Post reporter. There would have been somebody more than willing, gleefully ready to leak this smoking gun out to the press if there was anything there. The fact that there hasn't been pretty much tells you all you need to know about this Russia probe.
Yeah, that's right, Andrew. And also, you know, in the world of politics, you know, politics is not for the faint of heart. You know, if any candidate can find dirt on an opposition candidate,
yep,
they're going to use it in order to win an election.
Yep, you're exactly right. Now, KW, you said you hope Donald Trump.
How can you come out and say Trump colluded with the Russians when there was no votes changed? No votes changed from Hillary Clinton to Donald J. Trump.
Now, you said you hope Donald Trump is a one-term president. Who are you rooting for? Who are you rooting for to be our next president?
Right now, you know, yesterday the name of Eric Holder
was
floated out there.
Oh.
You know, I kind of like Holder, but the one person
that's frightening.
Two people who I hello.
Yeah, I hear.
Yeah, the two people who I don't want to see run. Number one, well, actually three people. Number one, Joe Biden.
Okay.
Number two, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Number three, Pocahontas.
Maybe I do want. Are we talking like actual Disney princess Pocahontas?
He's talking about Elizabeth Warren.
I'd love to have someone that can paint with the colors of the wind.
I think I'm with you on
Princess
that.
Jasmine.
I'm with you on that.
I'd
vote for Princess. I'd vote for Jasmine.
I'd vote for Jasmine too.
I'd vote. She gets all my votes.
Eric and Ramsey, go ahead. Oh my God.
Good morning. You know, KW almost had me for a minute there. I almost thought he understood what was going on. Until he used the term Russian.
Yeah.
The whole memo thing proved that there were no Russians. There was no U-boat. There was nobody coming ashore and trying to kill people.
Right.
You know, it just, they'll never get it. And if they do get it, they're going to lie about it and think, oh, it's nothing. Our people are just great. This is the problem with what we have going on.
Yeah, it was part of it.
Mm-hmm. That's just, they're believing their own lies and they'll never admit to it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Thanks, Eric. You know, so many people are already convinced and already firmly believe that the collusion happened, and nothing will ever change their mind at this point. You've got so many people out there that are just because of the narratives, because of the lies, because of the dossier, because of the fact that there is an investigation going on, that's enough.
Right.
They walk away going, they're just waiting for the proof. You know, and even if the proof never comes, they're just going to think, well, you know, they just did a good job of covering it all up.
Well, and I don't think that a majority of the left and the anti-Trump crowd actually believes that the dossier is real. They don't care. I don't think, and that's what's so interesting to me is like, it doesn't matter to those that don't like Trump and to the left and those that want to bring him down and believe in the Russia collusion. It doesn't matter if the dossier is real or not to them. The dossier is simply a means to get to whatever conclusion they want to see happen. And again, do you really, really want that to be the case? Think about what you're asking. Is it
no?
You know, I mean, it still makes me laugh when I go, you know, if you got really what you wanted and Trump was out of office, you have Pence.
Yeah, we got President Pence.
Are you good? You say you're going to be happy with that?
Yeah. Who you could make the case is more conservative than Trump.
They might be more effective. Perhaps. You know? Just saying. This is just it's arguable. Yeah. You know.
Joel in Montrose. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Fantastic.
I had to rinse my mouth off after KW talked about Eric Holder being president.
Right.
Oh, that's terrifying.
A comment there came up, you know. And, but anyways.
I have bile in my mouth now.
I want to get your take on a couple different things here.
Okay.
The first thing is do you think that anybody is actually going to get prosecuted over all this?
No.
I mean, especially on the left. Do you think anybody's actually going to make it?
Nope.
To
no. No.
Nope.
No.
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 So we're just wasting a lot of government money.
Yep.
A lot of our tax dollars. Yeah.
Well, I won't go that far, Joel, because I will say that, and it was highlighted when we talked with Andrew Langer earlier this week, we have seen a lot of people who have left the FBI. When you look at the list of names of the individuals that are no longer there since all of this happened, Comey, McCabe, there's the guy that resigned the day the memo came out. There is a very slow, like molasses draining of the swamp taking place. These things just take time. And we mentioned this yesterday, but it's worth mentioning over and over again. And that is so many of us, when we see this in front of us, we want something immediately to happen. When that memo dropped on Friday, man, you just go, I want heads to roll. This is so abundantly wrong and hypocritical that they went and did this. I just want someone to be held accountable. And it's Washington, it's politics. Stuff moves at a snail's pace. It's just that doesn't happen.
And people cover up for people. And I think to John's point and what John said, the best, sadly, and this is me being cynical, the best you can hope for is that people just lose their jobs.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, as far as criminal accountability, I just don't expect that to happen.
I know something else that's the best.
The best part of waking up is knowing Hillary lost to Trump.
It really, really is.
It really is. This makes you smile.
Every morning I wake up with a smile.
I'm so happy. What happened? I don't care. You're not president.
What happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what happened.
Little more Hillary news on the other side of the break. A Uranium One informant has made allegations to Congress about Clinton, basically saying, you know, that, Russia was donating money to the Clinton Foundation because they knew that it would get them favors within the Obama administration while Clinton was Secretary of State.
We'll get to that. And we will talk about Dai Tao and how he don't mess around.
Justice in
651-989-5855 is the phone number. You want to join us here for the last segment of Justice and Drew, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. From the Hill. An FBI informant connected to the Uranium One controversy told three congressional committees in a written statement that Moscow routed millions of dollars to America with the expectation it would be used to benefit Bill Clinton's charitable efforts while Secretary of State Hillary Clinton quarterbacked a reset in the U.S.-Russian relations. The informant, Douglas Campbell, said in the statement obtained by The Hill that he was told by Russian nuclear executives that Moscow had hired the American lobbying firm APCO Worldwide specifically because it was in position to influence the Obama administration and, more specifically, Hillary Clinton. Campbell said that Russian nuclear officials told me at various times they expected APCO to apply a portion of the $3 million annual lobbying fee it was receiving from the Russians to provide in-kind support for the Clintons' global initiative.
Every day it just seems like more and more like they blamed Trump and Russia collusion because they were the ones doing it.
Yeah,
we were doing it over here, but we'll say he was doing it.
Yeah. It's that Alinsky tactic. Just accuse your opponents of everything you're doing. Because then you've got, you know, because you're doing it, you've got the full story that you could tell.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You can cover all the details.
You know of which you speak. You know what we need? You know what we need, Drew? We need more Dai Taos.
Yeah.
He's honest well, about
just
it.
Like, yeah, they just wear their corruption on their sleeve and they're clumsy about it.
Dai Tao don't care.
Dai Tao don't care.
Out of the Pioneer Press, questions now are being raised about Dai Tao's political future.
Gee, you think?
A day after he was charged with unlawfully helping an elderly woman to vote in last November's election. Okay, come on, Pioneer Press. He wasn't helping the elderly woman.
It was Mr. Zhang.
Mr. Zhang was helping the elderly woman. Right.
His alter ego.
some like voters.
Banner and the Hulk. It's Dai Tao and Mr. Zhang.
I just watched the teaser trailer for Venom. I think that Mr. Zhang might have been in that trailer. I know that Venom wasn't in that trailer. Some voters approached the leadership of the St. Paul DFLer, asking him about the possible recall petition or the likelihood of rescinding the party's endorsement Tao received for his council seat in 2015. His actions, intentional or not, erode the trust and confidence at a time when our community is looking to elected officials to have integrity, said one ward, one DFL co-coordinator and former city council candidate. Over the course of the 2017 election season, Tao was the subject of two campaign-related investigations, one of which has now resulted in criminal charges against him. On Tuesday, the Dakota County Attorney's Office charged Tao with a gross misdemeanor for allegedly entering the voting booth with an elderly woman to help her vote.
Yeah.
Other than
it was Mr. Zhang.
It was Mr. Well, he told her it was Mr. Zhang. She had bad eyesight and didn't know how to fill in the circles. Other than to fill out her own ballot, candidates are not allowed in the polling locations. He's not getting good advice, said one former city council candidate. He can't count on having friends in City Hall, but I don't think he'll resign. The real question is, will this have legs in the next election?
Will the electorate care? Probably not.
In April, allegations were raised that Tao had solicited a bribe from lobbyist Sarah Clark, wife of new Minneapolis Mayor Manchild Jacob Fry, and her client, a food container company. The report, which fueled calls for Tao to resign, caused him to fire his campaign manager. But not Tao. He ain't going to quit. Don't stop. Never stop.
No charges were filed in that case, but it raised questions about his political style. as in corrupt.
that political style.
that kind.
Criminal matters aside, Tao has also made headlines and potential adversaries by using his political station to publicly shame and accuse his peers. In a candidate forum just 4 days before the election, Tao accused then-Council President Russ Stark of attempting to get him jailed. He had previously accused then-mayor candidate Melvin Carter of leaking his campaign's text messages to the press. However, Tao is one of the most council's most liberal advocates, also has his defenders. He's drawn a following based in part of his efforts to retool the city's police civilian internal affairs review commission. Well, you know, again, he knows about what he's talking about. He's got firsthand knowledge of how criminal investigations work.
Former council member Dave Toon said he felt Tao was under unfair scrutiny for helping an elderly voter at the polls. He said, aww, it's not something they teach you in campaign school. He was just being a helper.
Aww.
But he was breaking the law.
He's being a helper.
Yeah. It should be something they teach in campaign school, if there is indeed a campaign school. Or you just hire someone who knows the law and educates you.
Or you should just know that you probably shouldn't do that. Common knowledge. Like, I don't even know what all the rules are. What are the rules? I don't even know what all the rules are going in to vote. I just use common sense. And common sense would tell me I should probably not have somebody there in the booth next to me when I go and vote. And I'm just a civilian. If you're a council member, you're somebody in office, you should absolutely know better. Just use common sense. Lee Royce, executive director of the Frogtown Neighborhood Association, said in a written statement, as a council member, Dai Tao fights hard to remove barriers for people and small business in our neighborhood every day. He's a responsive and hardworking council person who knows those barriers intimately. He intimately knows barriers.
Yeah, and he crosses them. By going into voting booths and helping people.
That's vote. The only way he has to get intimate with them before he can cross them. Chat a little bit of my inner comedian Brian Miller there. Hey, let's go here. This is a fun one. We got time. USA Today today. Huh? Two New York lawmakers You ready for this?
Yep.
They want to require, Sam, are you on this?
I'm ready.
They want to require the companies behind the detergent packets, like Tide Pods, to individually wrap each packet and change the colorful designs so they're less appealing to children. Basically,
No!
They want a law to make Tide Pods left appetizing.
Yeah.
The bill comes
in. Look, this whole Tide Pod thing, people are doing it on purpose, you dummies.
They know that it's bad for them. They're not like, oh, piece of candy.
It's called the Tide Pod Challenge, not the oops, my kid ate a Tide Pod.
Oh, piece of candy.
Yeah. The word challenge is in there.
Well, how else are you supposed to clean your system? Right?
I figured
it's a faster way to do a cleanse.
You know what? If Tide, are they talking about all detergent companies or just Tide?
No. So the bill comes amid the growing concerns of children and teenagers eating the packets, sometimes posting videos online called the Tide Pod Challenge. Assemblywoman Aravella Simotas and Senator Brad Holloman, both New York Democrats, wrote a letter Monday. Okay, so they're suggesting. Wrote a letter Monday to Procter & Gamble, which owns the Tide brand, urging them to take their own steps to make products safer. The legislation is a sensible measure to address the product's dangers. Okay. The bill would also add detergent packets to other hazardous household products by requiring child-resistant packaging and clear labels.
No, I don't want child-resistant packaging. I love that I can just pop open my Tide Pod or whatever. I love because I use laundry pods.
Do you? You do you? Because I have not used laundry pods.
My family almost exclusively uses laundry pods because we have a lot of kids in the family, and the kids will do their own laundry, which is nice. But they'll do their own laundry and they'll just dump half a bottle in there. So we have to do pods.
So do you just throw a pod into the mix? That's all you do.
You throw it down on the bottom, and I usually do two.
You throw it in and put your clothes on top.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it. It's so easy.
That does sound. You should be a commercial. It's so easy.
How do they taste?
I haven't tried them. It's like, this is Sam-proof laundry. But if I have to individually unwrap each one, I'll probably go back to liquid because I love that I can just open up the bag, grab one, and throw it in.
One of the one of the Democrats in New York said, we're asking for all laundry detergent pods to be uniform in color. We don't need them to look like gummy bears in order for consumers to use them.
But what are they going to do? Make them brown? Then they look like brownies. Like, what do you do? What color can you make them that doesn't
look like a giant peanut?
Yeah, you don't need government getting involved in this. People are doing this on purpose. They're not doing it because it looks a certain way.
They're not like,
and you don't need a law determining what a Tide Pod can look like.
Well, I haven't even seen the numbers.
Have a little faith in people.
I haven't even seen the numbers of the consumption here.
How many people are actually doing this? Like a few people that did a video that everybody's all upset about?
Because see, what happens like this, is the kind of stuff that gets all this attention, right? The Tide companies are very reluctant to go and move on it because you know what? They're getting a bunch of free advertising. Because most people are rational about, you know, look, because of this story, we've had a conversation with Sam who's used them, and she has shown me how easy it can be to go and do laundry. I'm the kind of idiot that goes and puts too much of whatever it is in there and mix and matches because I'm told I'm not allowed to do laundry.
Oh, and I always would do that too. I'd always use way too much detergent and we would blow right through it. But the pods actually make it easy and it's all measured out.
If this were as big a problem as people would like to make you believe it is, and it really isn't. I mean, you're talking to isolated incidents here and some really stupid teenagers.
Right.
But in the grand scheme of things, this is a small number of people that has gotten the disproportionate amount of media attention. If it were as bad as they want you to believe, Tide would take care of this on their own.
Of course.
They don't want, you think Tide wants people eating its pods? Of course not.
It's not exactly good advertising, right? Getting all this press is. And I want to see the numbers because when you look at the number of things that kids go and eat and put in their mouths in their households that they probably shouldn't, Tide Pods are probably way, way down on the list. Dude, when I was a kid, true story, when I was a kid, and I have no idea why, I remember when it happened, I came across some batteries, huge D-sized batteries that had gone bad. They were leaking. For some reason, I decided to lick them. I decided to lick. I'm like, what is this substance on the mat? burn my tongue. My parents freaked out. Kids do stupid stuff.
Yeah, they put things in their mouths
that they shouldn't put in their mouths.
And it's not based on their pretty colors. It's just the thing kids do.
Yeah, I just said, that looks like syrup. I think I'll lick a battery.
That is such a John thing. I just picture little kitty John.
It's true.
Totally. At least you've lived this long.
It really is astonishing. It really is astonishing. I remember when a few years after that, I went to go when my parents got divorced, and I went to go do laundry. I didn't know how much you could put into the washer, right? Yeah. The clothes washer. So my dad came home in the middle of when I was doing laundry, and I had taken a broom, and I was literally pushing the laundry into the washer with the broom, trying to stuff it all in. It's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm trying to get all the clothes in here. I just want to do one load. He's like, that's how this works. If we get them all in, they'll all get washed, right? It's like, no, that's not how
kids
works.
Just do dumb things.
The concept of capacity never occurred to you?
No. Granted, I was a teenager at the time, but no, and it didn't. Just wanted to get it all done.
I don't understand why people are breaking this up in all these separate loads. Just cram it in there.
I just figured they all had it wrong.
Everybody else.
Yeah. It's like when I got the deep dish, pizza. And I just recalculated the math to do it in the microwave. If it's 25 minutes on 325 in the oven, then I could probably do like 10 minutes on high in the microwave, and I should be able to cook it the same way.
Oh, my God.
It was not the case. I ate it. But it was not the case. Yeah, it was.
What did it taste like?
Well, it was a deep dish, right?
Hot, so
it,
soft dough?
Yeah. So it was.
Cheese is melted everywhere.
It was a deep dish, so it had the really high crust.
Yeah.
So the crust got cooked pretty well, but the middle part of it was like Drew said. It was just basically this cooked sort of mush. Like, it was like pizza soup. I had to eat it with a spoon.
Why did you still eat it?
Yeah, because it was good. I won't say.
How did it fit in your microwave? Was it like a personal pizza?
Yeah, it was
pizza?
Like a personal pan pizza. Yeah. It's true.
You know, if you had like a conventional oven, one of those, what do you call that? Like a microwave oven or
right.
something?
Wait,
not like a microwave.
Toaster oven.
A toaster oven, yeah. That would have probably worked.
That would have taken too long. Then.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole point of it was he didn't want to wait the 25 minutes.
No.
He wanted his pizza now.
Exactly.
I get it.
Yeah, he understands. Yeah. You
make something else. Or order a pizza. You would have gotten a pizza before then.
Yeah. I won't say that I did it again a second time.
Oh my God. We did tease this story a little bit yesterday while we just got a few minutes left from the city pages. You got these snow emergencies going on, obviously, which limit your ability to park on certain side of the streets. City pages says Ying Lee and her family moved to Northeast Minneapolis 2 years ago. The house's back driveway, half paved and half gravel, can fit 6 cars. More than perfect for a family of 7 with 5 cars. 2 days into the new year, though, the family received a notice that due to a city of Minneapolis ordinance, they're only allowed to park 2 cars in their oversized driveway.
Right.
Why does Minneapolis care, first of all? If you've got a driveway that can hold 6 cars, what business of it is the city's? How many cars you put on that driveway?
Because they can give you a $200 fine from the city.
Yeah, so the city, predictably, called a snow emergency. Happens. Lee's family thought they were being dutiful residents by getting their cars into the driveway and leaving the street to the plows. No. They had planned to leave the cars in the driveway for the night, then move 3 of them back to the street. The next day, the family was slapped with a $200 fine from the city.
Yeah, the city has handed out 275 fees in relation to the violation. They do say in the story that they don't do it unless they get a written warning first. And so that was my thing, was like, why? There's so many other ways to enforce this. I mean, I would only enforce it if there was actual complaint. Like, if the neighbors around you complain that there's too many cars in your driveway, that's when you can go, okay, I could see the city coming out and doing this. And according to the story, they say they do send a warning letter beforehand, but I wonder if they even do that.
Who cares? It's your driveway. It's your property.
Well, they don't want cars piling up, people working on cars and driveways. So again, if the neighbors complain, then you can draw attention to it. But I can understand why the ordinance is there. I hate
ordinances like this because what they amount to at the end of the day is neighbors.
Right.
It's just neighbors complain. I don't want to have to look at all those cars. Then close your blinds.
Well, close your eyes. That's what I always tell.
God, I hate neighbors like that.
I don't like looking at it.
The city needs to do something because I don't like what I see out my window.
It depends on what they see out their window.
It's the equivalent of my little 8-year-old sister being like, don't look at me. Close your eyes.
Yeah. Close your blinds, nosy neighbor.
Oh, we're out of time. Oh, what a bummer.
Oh, no.
Can't get into this discussion.
Let's go eat some Tide Pods.
Let's go get some deep dish pizza.
Cook it in the microwave?
No, thank you.
Give me nothing. I'm Chris Addison. Here's a